Coming up on Chasing the Natty, we reached out to y'all, the CFF public, and asked y'all to give us your hottest takes you can come up with for CFF this upcoming season. Today, I'm bringing on Nino Brown from CFB Nation to take a look at some of your hot takes and to decide just how hot they are, and if maybe, just maybe, they might have some merit to them. We've got all of that and more coming right after this.
Go, breaks a tackle, he's 10, he's touchdown!
Burton's gonna throw the deep ball, and Burton cut the defense! Touchdown, Luther Burton!
Milrow gonna run it again, got a lane, kicked in the turbo, Milrow! Goodbye, touchdown, Bama!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in, everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the off-season, 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campusofcanton.com. Subscribe there to any of our expeditious tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, Campus Canton Leagues, College IDP, College DFS. Really, if you play it, we've got content for you, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. So go check it out over there. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me and the show on Twitter. I am at CFF underscore Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And the very handsome and energetic fellow joining me today is Mr. Nino Brown at underscore underscore Nino Brown underscore underscore on Twitter. I had to make sure I got those underscores in there, Nino, and make sure I got the correct number of them. Nino, welcome to the show, man. I believe this is your first time coming on to CTN. We did a show with the CFF list guys during the season. Had a ton of fun with that. But again, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Good. I appreciate you bringing me on here. And again, yeah, we talked about that battle that we had in the CFF league, and you know, it was deep diving. We were at bottom end of it in the playoffs, and we were deep diving for guys that had to be less than 30% owned. But you know, it was a good time. It's always a good time to come back on and talk some college football, which unfortunately I didn't get to get all my picks in that first summa cum laude draft. I got auto picked in the beginning, but I got back in it and was able to get some guys of my guys in the end. So I'm excited to talk some hot takes with you.
It was pretty funny because people were listening to the live show, and I had multiple people DM me asking, like, so what was going on with Nino the whole first couple of rounds? And I was just like, I think he was like running late or something like that. But yeah, you're here now, so you're on time for this, and we're gonna have a great show here today. Again, just a reminder, everybody, if you didn't catch me at the top of the show, I reached out to all of you guys out there on the Twitter space, which is easily the place where most people discuss CFF for the most part. And I wanted to get as many hot takes as possible. We're gonna run through 10 of them today. Again, these aren't our hot takes. This is y'all's hot takes that you provided to us. We're gonna react to them. We're gonna analyze them. Take a look at like how hot we think they are to our own biases, to what we think the CFF landscape in general, how hot is it compared to how people feel in general. It's going to be a really good time. So yeah, you know, I think with a few announcements to go, I think we can get right into it. So let me go ahead and throw us over to our next page here.
Oh boy.
And go through a couple of these announcements real quick. Again, first of all, if you have not checked out the latest episode, Defending the Natty, our CFF Dynasty spinoff podcast on the Chasing the Natty podcast feed, only on the podcast feed currently, we went through supplemental players, guys that are less than 10% owned in leagues at the end of week 13 last year that should be pretty widely available for the most part in your Dynasty leagues. So me and Nate ran through, I can't even imagine how many names we ran through in that. It's got to be at least 40, even close to 50 names we talked about in that podcast. It was like close to 2 hours. So we were really cooking in that one. Speaking of CFF Dynasty, my CFF Dynasty startup rankings are available on the Campus of Canton website. You can access those with our NIL tier. It's $7.99 per month or $79.99 for the year. And so you can access those now. It's the only CFF Dynasty startup startup rankings that you can find out there right now. So if you're getting into one of those leagues this year, it's the best place to go and look for it, which means it's going to be absolutely terrible for me this year if I start up any dynasty leagues, because everybody's going to be looking at the exact same rankings as I am. So with all of that being said, that's pretty much all of our announcements today. Again, a lot of great stuff going on over campuscant.com, so go and check out our website to see some more announcements we got going on over there. So Nino, I haven't given you the opportunity, actually, Nino, so we're going to take this opportunity right here during this announcement section. Tell everybody, what it is you do? What do you do for CFP Nation? I know you're part of the Dynasty Degenerates podcast as well. What all do you do, man?
I would say co-CEO of CFP Nation with my buddy KT. We both work hand in hand to build a brand, and we have a bunch of guys that, with us, we do independent shows. But, I do, we do an overreaction Monday of what's going on in college football. And I have a CFP Prime show that I like to get into. And it's kind of like the hot takes and what's going on. And we're trying to stir the pot here. We're trying to get everybody a little wild, especially in this quote unquote off season. You know how it is, but we're trying to keep the soup bubbling. You know what I mean? So I'm over there on CFP Nation, and I also run their Twitter. And then on Debbie DeGen's, I do the Debbie DeGen podcast there. And I do a little bit of video and graphics works for League Winners.
Absolutely. And pretty much, like you said, you guys are really good at stirring the pod, looking at those hot takes, which is the exact reason why you were perfect for a show like this. The moment I saw that you were interested in this show, I was just like, oh, bam, got to get Nino on here. He's gonna love this. So one thing I did want to do before we got onto this year's hot Ooh. Takes, Nino, is I wanted to look at a couple of the ones we had last year. So Chris K and I did a hot take show last year. It was a little bit closer to the season, I'll admit. Again, we're doing this a little bit earlier this year. But I wanted to shout out a couple of the guys whose hot takes actually ended up coming true here. So again, we had one that was on our got a little bit of spice or got some heat to it tier. That was Kyle Jackson's. He said Xavier Worthy would be nowhere near a top 10 CFF wide receiver. Coming in, he was a dynasty owner since day one. Worthy finishes wide receiver 45, kind of got hurt a little bit by lack of touchdown equity and everything like that. A.D. Mitchell ended up being pretty awesome there, and so his prediction came true. We actually had three in our Get Some Water tier come true here. Shout out to Benjamin Jacob here with his prediction on Brady Cook would, one, stay the starter throughout the season and have a John Rhys Plumlee-like season. I don't know if we quite got that, but Benjamin Jacob did say, let's say top 25 QB finish, he'll be the poor man's JRP. Well, Brady Cook did finish as the QB 23. Now, I think a lot of that had to do with a bit better of a passing performance than we expected out of Brady Cook rather than the rushing, like Ben said. But I'm going to give it to Ben regardless, because he did predict a top 25 Brady Cook season, and he got one. Go ahead, Nino.
With Cook, I mean, they were booing this guy out of the stadium first 2-3 weeks. His own students and fans were booing him out, and this dude just kept, no pun intended, but kept cooking. And he was a guy that was out there just every week putting up them numbers, and he got himself in the top 25. I mean, a guy who can take that adversity and just kind of like just block it out and keep going down, and he made Theo Weiss relevant again, right? Theo Weiss was supposed to be a guy in Oklahoma, and he came over here to Mizzou, and he was relevant again. I know Luther Burden's the dude, but someone's got to get him the ball, and Brady Cook was able to do that. So kudos to Jacob there with that one.
Oh, absolutely. And then Kyle from KL Fantasy on Twitter, he said LeJonte Wester would be a top 10 wide receiver last year. Man, I like LeJonte Wester, even though I wasn't ready to fully go there. Well, guess what? Wester finished as a wide receiver 6 on the season. So Kyle, great call there. And last one here from Cooper, @_Butterpants on Twitter last year, said Phil Maffa would be a better fantasy asset by the end of the year than Will Shipley. And Phil Maffa finishes RB 48, Shipley RB 52. So he got that call very correct there. And again, as we can see now, Maffa is now a first round, second round pick in a lot of best ball and startup leagues right now. So fully, fully great call from Cooper there. So hopefully we can get just as many, if not more, of these hot takes that actually come true this year. So shout out to all of those guys. Nino, you ready to get into some of this year's?
Let's get it.
All right, we'll start with the first one here. It comes to us from our friend Chris Moxley. Not a CFF take, but he left it down there regardless, and I did promise him I would bring it up on the show. He says, Nickelback is an enjoyable listen, and the masses got caught up in an unnecessary hate. I am going to leave this on the lowest tier of spice because Mr. Moxley is absolutely correct, and there will be no further questions. So we're moving on to the next one. Then.
I love it. So, I absolutely love it.
But all right, I'll explain what's going on here for those of you watching on YouTube and also for those of you who listen on podcasts. Basically, what's going to happen here? We're going to take a look at some of these hot takes here, and we're going to rate them on a 4-tier scale here of spiciness. The lowest tier we have here is the where's the spice tier. This is like we're looking at it like, this doesn't really seem like that hot of a take. Like you're pretty much in line with what a lot of people are thinking here. Second tier is got some heat. Again, it's not like you're getting there. I can see how, like, you know, you got to work on your hot takiness just a little bit there. But for the most part, like, I can see how you think this might be a hot take. Get me some water. This is where you're kind of stretching things a little bit in my mind. This is where you're like, I can see the path, but it's definitely a small path to get there. And if you truly believe it, I will say, get me some water. That's a pretty hot take. And then, of course, everybody's favorite tier. Y'all got a lot of reactions from this last year, but this is the devil's anus hot level. This is where I'm sitting here thinking, like, if you truly believe this, you need to explain to me what path you see to get to this outcome, because I personally cannot see it for the most part. And so those are our four tiers. Again, we'll kind of run through some of these tiers. I'm going to analyze both from my own personal biases as well as how I think how hot they are compared to the masses take. Nino, I don't really know how you're going to kind of break it down there for the most part. But at the very end of each one, I'm going to sit there and say like which category I'm ultimately going to put myself in. As if you're watching this on YouTube, we have our little tokens, so we'll have those placed in the correct ones. Right now, we're at the very bottom. We're at Where's the Spice? And we'll change it based on the takes here. So, Nino, you ready to get into this?
Yeah, let's go. I'm ready. I'm going to be in the same realm as you, okay. Where the masses are at and in the same aspect as well.
Sounds good. So, Nino, I'm going to throw it over to you first, man. This one comes to us from Benjamin Jacob, who had himself, again, that great call with Brady Cook last year. He's got another quarterback take this year. He is saying Kyron Jones will be a top 10, nay, top 8 CFF quarterback for this season. So, Nino, what spiciness level are you putting this at?
I'm going to go with, you know, I'm a Massachusetts guy. So my guy, Emeril Lagasse, would be a little upset and say, bam, where's the spice here? Because, you know, unless you're a casual, I mean, Kyron Jones has been climbing that ladder of buzz and relevance in the CFF community for a little bit now. I mean, if he didn't have the 2 weeks to start the season where he wasn't a starter, he probably would have finished inside of the top 20. He finished inside the top 25, and he's, you know, he's 22nd in returning quarterbacks this year. So I just don't think this is a very spicy take, and especially because I've been saying for a while that I believe that Kyron Jones is a Jalen Hurts 2.0, and you're going to get that breakthrough season like Hurts this year in that final season. If you go back and look at some of the numbers, they're eerily close. Completion percentage right around 60% that first season. Boom. 57.7 for Kyron Jones in his first year. Like breakaway yards on the rushing side of it, both yards after contact, they're all very, very close. No, I believe that this take is where's the spice? Because I believe Kyron Jones is going to come out of the gate early and often and be a top 10 quarterback right away. So I believe a top 8 isn't out of the realm. Again, where's your spice here?
I don't mean to throw on even more cold water here, but I'm going to stick with where's the spice level as well here, because you're talking about just like his performance, like going, like kind of coming up and everything like that. Again, in terms of a total point system, he finishes a QB 42 last year. But like you said, a lot of that has to do with the fact that he missed those first two games. They didn't start him until week 3, right? Right. And so had he continued to do that, he definitely would have finished probably easily in the top 30 quarterbacks, maybe not even a little bit higher. I think that this year, with them kind of getting some weapons back, they get Allie Jennings back at wide receiver, right? You get another year of Lofton, their other wide receiver there. He's got some weapons to work with there. But even just in general, compared to the masses, right? Like, Kyron Jones is currently being drafted as QB 13 in drafts right now. So clearly everybody's kind of here with you, Benjamin. Like, people expect him to have a big season. They expect that jump. Our staff at Campus of Canton, like, our average ranking of him is also QB 13. So, like, I just don't think, predicting somebody to finish three spots, especially in a game as volatile as CFF, three spots higher than where we're taking him in drafts and where we're ranking him, I just don't think it's a very hot take. Maybe back in like January, February, when he's going like the 13th round to start drafts and stuff like that. That'd been a hot take back then. But that was a hot take back then, and people quickly caught on to it, saying like, "Oh no, he's got a pretty good shot here."
Well, that you start thinking, okay, why is this guy getting drafted? Or why I didn't have this guy on my board? Why is he going, you know, three rounds higher than I had him? And you start going back, you start doing a little research, and you start to see, you know, not only does he get the receiving weapons back, I think he brings in the freshman Bethel Roman as well, who's a, you know, possible day one starter for them. They have a solid running back in that backfield, which automatically takes his free safety or your middle linebacker out of mm-hmm. the picture. Right now, you're opening up lanes for a mobile quarterback. Toothin and drones in that backfield together are a serious combination. And I think people kind of underrate that. I'm telling you right now, Kyren Drones is easily a top 10. 12 quarterback in this league. So if he would make that jump and do anything better than what we're expecting, yeah, this isn't a very spicy take at all.
I gotcha. Let me ask you, you know, I don't know if you have your CFF rankings in front of you or anything like that. Where would you have, where do you have Drones? Because I currently have him. Let me look at my rankings real quick. I have Drones. I have him down a little bit. I ain't gonna lie. Because I am so worried about West Virginia's ability to make that huge jump. So I got him down to like QB 22. So again, compared to my takes, this is probably a little spicy for me, but also, like, I fully see the path, right? Dual threat quarterback playing right. The ACC. Again, I totally get it. It's not very spicy.
I got him in the 12-15 range for me. I'm okay. High on Drones because, like I said, I truly believe he takes that Jalen Hurts jump this year. Like, just when you look at it, the throwing motion, the way, you know, he automatically, when he's on the run, he looks to throw the ball before trying to run. Like, he's got all of those, like, similarities to Hurts in the build as well, the size. So I think he takes that jump for me. That's why I have him a little bit higher than consensus. But, 12-15 is where I got him right now.
Okay. Sounds good. So, again, very much not even spicy compared to your own biases. So, let's move on to the next one here. This one comes to us from Sidewalk Buffalo. He says, Ty Thompson will have a better CFF season at Tulane than fellow Pac-12 transfers, quarterbacks Malachi Nelson and Cam Ward. So, an interesting take, especially considering where these guys are going in drafts, right? Ty Thompson, quarterback 63 in drafts, 24th round. Malachi Nelson, a little bit higher, QB 41, 15th round, like right in the middle of drafts, makes sense. And then Cam Ward, of course, QB 15 in a lot of drafts, 7th round. A guy going very highly, people expecting him to take really what he was able to do at Washington State and be able to apply it there at Miami. The reports have been amazing out mm-hmm. of spring, so I totally get why people are buying into Ward. I would say, I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm going to put some, got some heat, or actually, no, I'm like in between got some heat and put and get me some water on this one, because one, I fully believe that Ty Thompson could overtake Malachi Nelson, right? You're talking about, like, if you just look at their offensive systems that they're playing in, right? Malachi Nelson playing the Boise State system, they're 31.4 offensive points per game. Their quarterback averaged 14.45 fantasy points per game. Their best game was 23 fantasy points in a game. So, like, Malachi Nelson really could be very well overdrafted right now, especially if they're going to rely on that backfield duo of GNT and Dubar. Right, even if with the receiving weapons they have around, I don't know if they're going to really let Nelson cook like that. Versus Ty Thompson, kind of similar deal, right? Troy system, they were 28.2 offensive points per game, 18.93 fantasy points per game is what they got their quarterback, Gunnar Watson, last year. He finishes QB 45. I could totally see Ty Thompson overtaking Nelson, especially if Tulane does throw the ball quite a bit. Cam Ward is the one I'm kind of getting a little bit more hesitant on whether or not I can get there, right? Because they have a lot of great weapons. Cam Ward has sounded incredible in spring. Last season, even with the QB turmoil that Miami had, they were putting up 30 points per game. Their quarterback, Tyler Van Dyke, when he was healthy, was still getting like 17.57 fantasy points per game. And that's with him being extremely limited by some of his injuries that he was kind of dealing with there. That's where I'm kind of putting this on the get me some hot water. I don't really, if Miami clicks, it's going to be hard not to expect Ward to outperform Ty Thompson, especially if Thompson doesn't run as much as we kind of want him to compared to Ward, who we do know for a fact can run. I think I'm going to put this at get me some water with my spice level here. Nino, what are you thinking, man?
Is it guaranteed that Ty Thompson beats out Kai Holton?
Oh, yeah. I was about to say, that's the other thing, right? Is that you have to – this also assumes that Ty Thompson wins this job. And so, like, that's what's going to push me into get me some water.
And you know, Willie Fritz seemed confident in Holton in those two games, not bringing back Michael Pratt early to push him because Holton was just commanding the bus, man, right? Just, you know, driving the bus. I mean, he's not going to wow you to death, but he's kind of not going to be the guy that's going to make a bunch of mistakes as well. Ty Thompson, I'm a Ducks fan, and this dude struggled at any point ever to get on the field. And when there was a chance where Bo was leaving, they went out and got somebody else.
Yep.
Right. Like they got someone else's used dirty laundry instead of someone that, you know, they had there for a year or two already that knows the system. This has been developed there. That alone speaks volumes for me. Okay. We've had the discussion about Boise before. I'm a big Prince guy. I don't know if, you know, he's going to end up being the wide receiver one for Boise, or they're just going to run the ball into the ground like the Tasmanian devil between Dunbar and Genty. So, but there's in the back of my mind, I think, why would you leave USC to go down, right? Mm-hmm. Going down a class. Most people do that to have a big numbers year to put themselves up back on the map, get that buzz again so you can go to another P4 program. Cam Ward went, declared for the draft, came back, right? He has Restrepo coming back, who's an absolute dog. Mm-hmm. Josiah Trader is an absolute dog as a freshman, an absolute technician on the outside. They have a 1-2 combo in that backfield, which is going to let Cam Ward see open lanes if he wants to run and also get a little more time in the pocket because they're not going to be able to figure out right away, is this guy going to stay home and be a dump pass? Is Martinez or Fletcher going to be, you know, going to get the ball on a delay? So they're going to have to, you know, he's going to have time. I think this is, get me some water closer to the devil's anus for me, because I don't think Ty Thompson is anywhere near the finish of either one of the guys in front of him.
I think it's a good point, especially when you're talking about like how much Ward has to work with. Cause you brought up Restrepo, you brought up Trader as a freshman. You didn't even mention Jacoby George coming back.
Right.
You didn't even mention the fact that Sam Brown is coming over from Houston. Houston's wide receiver one. It's coming loaded. Over to be their wide receiver three at Miami, right? Worked with Shannon Dawson before. Like, he's going to have so many weapons to work with. I really do think that that's kind of the big tipping point. I can see him overtaking Malachi Nelson, assuming that he does start. Because, again, he plays in the AAC, right? There's defense is a little bit more optional down there. Boise State wants to slow things down a bit more. Totally understand that. Ward is where I'm going to get a little bit harder for me to expect Ty Thompson to overtake him. So I'm fully with you on get me some water. So let me move.
Go ahead. And Tulane has Makai Hughes, who emerged as the guy, as the next Tajay Spears, right? Like, Tulane had trouble with running backs for the longest time outside of Matt Forte, and then, boom, here comes Tajay Spears. Here comes a guy that wasn't even expected to be a starter in Makai Hughes, who's going to probably give you another 1,300 yards this year, right, total. So it's like, I don't know if Ty Thompson's going to be able to be, you know, a top guy even out of these three.
All right, let's move on to the next one here, Nina. We're gonna you'll start off with this one, but this comes to us from our friends over at the G55 saying Amari Thomas greatly exceeds his ADP in terms of fantasy production. Nino, I'll start with you, man. What level of spice are you willing to give this take right here?
You know, it got some heat. Okay, a lot of people probably aren't even aware of Amari Thomas, and a lot of. And this is not, for lack of a better word, and it's not, no, not being, you know, negative, degenerates like ourselves, okay? You know, when you're going in the G5 and all, and you're diving down and you're pulling through MAC Nation players, hey, you just seem to be a little bit more of a degenerate in the college football world than
oh, for
sure. You know, the casual. So, but the casuals probably don't even know who Amari Thomas is, because they probably don't even know that Trent Dilfer is even the coach over at UAB. So, but the combination of Zeno Thomas, I think, is only going to get better this year, because I think another year of Trent Dilfer with Zeno in that development is going to make that offense be a lot better. And who's going to be the benefit of that is Amari Thomas. I know you said his ADP right now is, what, is it 56?
Wide receiver 56.
So you have him at 55. I think I have him somewhere right around like 58. So Yeah, for me, I would think that he's going to surpass that because the two gentlemen in front of him are gone. One of them's at the NFL, right? Palmer, and I'm not sure exactly where Jermaine Brown Jr. went.
Oh, he's gone. He
eligibility, right?
Eligibility done.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, and Palmer's on to the NFL. So, it's like, if he got a quarter, I think he gets half of, you know, those targets. I think he's going to surpass that and more. You know, I just think that he will be – I could give him wide receiver – I think he cracks the top 50. I think he cracks inside the top 50, 48, 49.
The key word for me here is greatly. That I was originally going to give this like a where's the spice, because, and I'll explain why here in a second. But greatly kind of implies to me like you're talking about like him finishing in like the top 36 wide receivers. Like he'll be a weekly starter for you in CFF if you have a three wide receiver team. And again, I love Amari Thomas. I always love freshmen that will that lead their team in targets in their very first year there. Now, granted, there were some other guys that went down early for UAB that kind of provided him a little bit of opportunity. But regardless, like he was out there. They gave him they increased his snap share more and more as the season went on for a good reason. Correct. He had a great game against Georgia early on in the season there. But like you mentioned, you know, like if we're just talking about can he exceed wide receiver 56, which is his current ADP, my rating has him at wide receiver 55. So to me, that's not super hot. If you're talking about him just kind of making the jump compared to where he was last year, where he was wide receiver 182, that's a pretty decent jump. So I'll give you a little bit of heat there. And so my way of analyzing this question is like, okay, can he beat what wide receiver 56 did last year? And that was Silas Bolden, 12.81 fantasy points per game, 153.7 total fantasy points. I'm like, all right, if I project out conservatively what Amari Thomas can do this year, can he beat those numbers? So the way I went about this, again, as you kind of mentioned, you know, UAB loses 179 out of their 427 total targets they put up last year, most of them coming from Tajuan Palmer and Jermaine Brown Jr. I said, let's give Thomas 1/6 of those targets, just be conservative, because he had a target share about 16% last year. So I'm like, okay, 1/6 of those targets, let's throw them over to Amari Thomas here. That adds 30 targets to his total from last year. That gives him a projection of 97 targets, which is, if you guys know me, if you can get to 100 targets, I consider you a good CFF pick. I continue to use his catch percentage of 79.1% from last year because I'm kind of scared they're going to still use him in the same role where his ADOT was only 5 yards last year. So, like, I'm kind of hoping that they very much give him an increase there. I did give him in my projection here a slight 10% boost in his efficiency. Again, you're going from freshman to sophomore year. Mm-hmm. You're clearly one of the starters. So that gets him from 8.2 yards per reception to 9 yards per reception. And then, of course, I provide my standard rule of one touchdown for every 100 yards I project. That's just kind of a simple projection thing. I'm not a big fan of like trying to predict touchdown percentage every single year because it's so random sometimes. Regardless,
it's hard to have a guy you trust be touchdown dependent.
Exactly. And so basically at the end of the day, this gave me a stat line of 97 targets, 77 catches, 693 yards, 7 touchdowns. That put him at 149.8 fantasy points, right below where he would need to be to break wide receiver 56 last year. But this is a very conservative estimate all around. If he improves in any way more than I expect, where they're getting more percentage of those targets than I was kind of giving there, or his efficiency goes from 8.2 yards per catch to maybe 12, he's going to easily beat his ADP. So I'll give him got some heat here because there are some things that need to change for him to kind of get there. But I don't think it's very crazy to expect him to become a guy that could become a weekly starter if things go the way we want to.
Yeah, I'm right there with you as well. Like, and you mentioned, you know, he had Silas Bolden was 12.8, right? And he had 153. Well, I mean, he finished with 121 and he averaged 10.08 per game. So, I mean, it's almost a three-point jump per game, which really isn't crazy, right? And it's only 33 points if you look at it, you know, in the realm of it all, differential to where Silas Bolden was last year.
Quick question: Are you looking at your points there that you're referencing? Is that full PPR or half point PPR? Because the stats I use are half PPR.
Oh, it might be full point PPR. I went from FanTrack, so it might be a full point PPR. That's where I'm getting those numbers.
So, but even so, that's like again, like what? They're like still. He's still got to jump like a good 40, 50 points. But still, like a sophomore breakout.
Going to be the one. Right. He's going to be the one on the team. And exactly. And a couple of things I want to throw out there that would help him is, you know, he had 80% catch rate every single week, and there was only two games that he was under 80%. So be sure handy. He had three total drops all year, right? And three games out of the total, I think it was 12 games, he had 10-plus targets. Now he's going to be the guy. So you're going to see way more games where he's going to get double-digit targets. And this is a guy that was the third option as a freshman who was 51-49 split between the slot and out wide. He's a guy you can line him up anywhere. He's going to be a one. They're going to have more of a manufactured packages for this kid. I truly believe that he's going to easily take that job. I believe that the developmental process will be huge for him with Zeno and Dilfer in that second year. And this guy's going to reap all those benefits. I think the A dot jumps from five to like, I'm going to go with like eight.
I can see it. And again, that's the point I was about to bring up was that don't rely too much on that catch percentage. Again, I did my projection a little bit there because I assumed that they're going to use him the same way. But if they're targeting him further down the field, that catch percentage is going to go down, right? A big reason why he had 80% low catch rate is because he wasn't catching balls that were coming that far, right?
No.
So I think that'll come down a little bit and it'll kind of balance out a little bit. But as for this take, again, got some heat. We're on the same page here, Nino. I'm going to put our tokens back down to the bottom, and we'll move on to the next one here. And this one comes up to us from Ian McNaughton, or McNaughton. He states, no tight end breaks the 100-point mark this season. He also says, hashtag ban tight ends from CFF. And here's the thing, y'all. Like, I think we can all agree. There's no, like, this year compared to the last couple of years, there's no, like, clear elite tight ends. We have this tier that we like, guys like Holden Willis, Aronde Gadsden, Dalvin Smith until recently, which, by the way, if y'all haven't heard, Dalvin Smith no longer a tight end on Fantrax, but Harold Fannin, Luke Lachey, Jake Brittingstool, some of us have really started coming around to the idea of Nick Harbor, Brant Keithy if he comes back. Like, there are guys we like, but they don't have the same feel as, like, you know, a Michael Mayer or a Brock Bowers, where you're looking at them being like, oh, that could be a 1,000-yard receiver this year. So Ian says straight up, no tight end breaks the 100-point mark this season. And I've mentioned this on the show before, but when I do my rankings, there's only one position that I actually project out, especially in a year like this year where there's no clear top guys for the most part, and that is tight end. And so I actually can directly compare this take of nobody breaks the 100-point mark compared to my projections here. And so among standard points, I have only one tight end breaking 100 points this season. I got a couple right below 100 points, but even still, like in standard, I agree with Ian McNaughton. There's definitely a path to nobody hitting that mark. Half point PPR, I got seven tight ends breaking 100 points. That's pretty much, like I said, that top tier that I kind of like for the most part. A few guys just under. In full point PPR, I got 20 tight ends breaking 100 points, in which case, like, this is a pretty hot take at that point. Then obviously tight end premium, I got like 30 tight ends breaking 100 points, and that's a wholly totally different ball game. I did ask Ian directly in the comments saying, what scoring are you asking for here? He did tell me standard. And unfortunately, that's going to bring down the hotness of the take here. But I'm still going to give him got some heat, right? I'm going to give him got some heat because even the one guy, Holden Willis, that I do project over 100 fantasy points in a standard format, he's barely above it, right? And if he doesn't make it, all the other guys don't make it, boom, you got nobody there. So all Ian needs is just one guy not to make it. However, this also assumes that nobody breaks out this year, right? Again, this is CFF, right? Guys are going to come out of nowhere. We're going to absolutely love it. And those guys could hit over 100 points. So there's a lot of paths to still just at least one guy making it over 100 points. So I'm going to say got some heat on this one. Nino, what are your thoughts, man?
I don't know many people that play standard tight end leagues anymore. But in this case, I'm going to have to go with got some heat because I truly believe. Now, here's my other question for you. Because I've already seen Holden Willis has a wide receiver tag and not a tight end tag. Is there a chance that by the time the season starts, he's not labeled a tight end?
I think there's a decent chance.
I have a feeling that the school might convert him to wide receiver.
But that's also assuming that, like, again, I feel like if Fantrax was going to do that, they would have done it with the sweep here with Dalvin Smith, right?
Yeah, I mean, and Gadsden too, because I'm pretty sure I'm seeing Gadsden under Syracuse. They're having him back to the wide receiver tag. It's odd how they.
Oh, really? I didn't catch that. Let me see.
I know I've seen Holden Willis as wide receiver on multiple leagues already, so that's why it's like confusing. I've also seen him at tight end, so it's like.
So in Fantrax and best ball leagues, they have an option to where if you turn it on, it's only their primary position, and Holden Willis's primary position is wide receiver. But if you turn that off, you get him at both wide receiver and tight end. And that's probably why you're kind of seeing the differentiation there.
Okay. All right. I honestly think that there's four guys going to go over this 100 point, even in the standard league. I think Holden Willis. I think Harold Fanning. I think Luke Lashie. And I believe this is a guy I've been pounding the table about because I think he's going to be the best receiver on their team. Bryson Nesbitt. Tight end from UNC. I believe he's going to be able to have this is going to be the breakout season for him. And I believe that he's going to get himself into that top four tight end in this class. And I think that gets him to 100 points. And I've been pounding the table about Harold Fanning Jr. I think this kid is an absolute monster. Like just body size, height, hands, can play in line. I think those four guys, because I don't trust the Rondae Gadsden to actually play tight end this year. I just don't. I don't believe it. I'm with Froton on this, that this is a facade. These people are just playing with our emotions here. And I think those four gentlemen that I mentioned are going to be guys that could possibly get to 100 points this year. So I'm going to give them some heat. I don't want to go out there and say, get me some water, because, you know, four out of, you know, what you got on the screen at 20 isn't, you know, a good percentage. So I'll go with got some heat.
No, I gotcha. By the way, Aranda Gadsden, I did look, is still labeled as a tight end on Syracuse's roster. So don't be scaring me like that, Nino. Don't be scaring me like that. No, I'll push back on that a little bit because I've done actually quite a bit of research with Syracuse for some reason. They've been one of my teams that I've actually been keeping an eye on. And they want four guys on the field as much as they can. They want Zeke Haynes. They want Aranda Gadsden. They want Trabor Pena. And they want Umari Hatcher. Right, two guys from last year, obviously Gadsden coming back, and then the transfer Zeke Haynes. Right, the only way you really consistently get all four of those guys out there is if Payne is in the slot and Gadsden's actually lining up in line, or sometimes in the slot, like you have two slots out there. Right, if that's the case, like he's going to be still a great option for CFF because anytime you can get a wide receiver playing tight end, right, that's going to be a pretty big advantage. But regardless, we don't need to hash out that argument every single time we bring up Aranda Gadsden. So we'll throw it over to the next one here, Nino. This one comes to us from our friend Purple Rain here at UW_Purple_Rain. He says, I should also put our tokens back here. Give me a second. He says that Wake Forest wide receiver Donovan Green will return from injury and be a top 50 fantasy wide receiver in 2024. Nino? Where are you going to put this one at?
This is the devil's anus for me. Because, like we discussed a little bit in the green room, a year and a half away from any relevance or any football playing, you're knocking some rust off. And I truly believe that Donovan Green was a product of better talent around him, but he faced the lower DB, safety, linebacker, whatever it may be, on that defense, because towards the end of 22, he was getting outplayed and outperformed by Jamal Banks. A.T. Perry was the guy, but Jamal Banks was the dude in 22 that was just cooking down the end of the schedule. And Green was kind of an afterthought. Now, granted, Green got hurt last year, but we saw everything continue with Banks in 2023. And now he's, you know, moved on to a different school, but he was the guy for Wake Forest last year. And I truly think that we might see Morin and the freshman Melvin come in here and have a connection with not Hank Bachmeyer and not with Michael Kern. I'm a guy that's been all about Jeremy Helinski here. And I think if the freshman, true freshman at that, gets in, I think that Donovan Green might be the odd man out here and not have that connection with the young freshman. And I think that Morin and Melvin are going to be the guys that are going to be eaten early and often. I think this take is hotter than the devil's anus. And I think that Donovan Green might not even make top 150 fantasy wide receivers in 2024.
Well, I mean, let's look at what Wake Forest was able to do last year with their wide receivers in their absolute disaster of a season that they had last year, right? Jamal Banks, wide receiver 122. That was their best wide receiver. That was the best wide receiver. Taylor Warren, wide receiver 181. Keyshawn Williams, wide receiver 271. He transferred out. Banks and Keyshawn Williams understood. They were like, this ship's going down right now. And they bring in Hank Bachmeyer. And like, I like Jeremy Helinski. I'm going to live in a world where he doesn't start at all this year, because they have said that they do want to redshirt him. So you get Hank Bachmeyer the whole year. Hank Bachmeyer's last great season was in 2021. Right, at Boise State, he hasn't done really anything since then. He's currently going undrafted. People clearly don't want to invest in this wide receiver system, right? The highest drafted wide receiver from Wake Forest this year is Damon Claiborne, their running back. That should tell you how much people are kind of staying away from this system. And for Purple Rain here to come in and say that Donovan Green will come back and be the reason why you want to invest in this passing game again, after he's basically missed one and a half seasons the last couple of years between his torn ACL and the knee surgery that ended his season last year, like, this is just, I don't know, man. Like, I really don't see an easy path here whatsoever, unless, you know, somebody exceeds my expectations wildly, whether Green's able to come back from his injury, multiple years of injury, and just be the same guy that we saw a couple years ago, whether Hank Bachmeyer just performs way better than what we had seen. I don't know, man. I'm with you. This is devil's anus for me on the hot take. We've been pretty much in line for the most part on all of these so far, but quite frankly, this is just the way that it has been. With like, some of these are pretty clear on what their rating should be.
I mean, if we were going to have any type of, maybe I'll tone it back and get it to get me some water. He didn't do a goddamn thing in the spring game. Horatio Fields was the dude who showed up and was balling out. And I went out and said right before the spring game, and I had to eat crow, that Horatio Fields stinks. Right. And then in the spring game, we went out and had, you know, I think he had two scores or two big plays in the game. Donovan McQueen was non-existent. It's sad, you know, and that's why for me, this is, you know, devil's anus, because I don't, like I said, he'd be lucky if he's inside the top 150.
I could totally see it. All right, let's move on to our next one here. We got some more wide receiver takes here. We'll take it to Oklahoma. I actually combined two hot takes here because two people had takes on the Oklahoma wide receiver room, so I'll just throw them here together. Alec Guerin says, Deion Burks, top five wide receiver. That's all he had to say. And then Steve comes in and says that Nick Anderson finishes as a wide receiver one in CFF, so top 12 guys there. Oh boy. This clearly is going to require some big jumps from the Oklahoma offense this year, which did quite great last year, right? With Dylan Gabriel at quarterback. But even with that great performance there, right? You have, let's see, top Oklahoma wide receiver was Drake Stoops, wide receiver 22, and that was with him getting a crap load of targets, getting 10 touchdowns. That's great, right? Nick Anderson finishes wide receiver 70 down there, and that was on the back of him getting some incredibly efficient games and 10 touchdowns as well. You bring in Seth Luttrell. He's now the offensive coordinator with Jeff Lebby off to Mississippi State. And if you look at his history, there's a couple years in here that are wonderful, right? 2018, his wide receiver one averaged 18.6 fantasy points per game. 2019, 18.5. And then that golden 2020 year with Jalen Darden, where Jalen Darden averaged 30.7 fantasy points per game. You give me a wide receiver that is averaging 30.7 wide receiver or fantasy points per game, yeah, I'm going to predict him to be in the top 12 or top 12, top five wide receivers for sure. But man, the hotness of this take for both of them is really, one, you're assuming that you know which guy it's going to be, right? Between Nick Anderson and Deion Burks, the only way you really get them to a top five performance is, one, they are the only thing working on their offense. So think guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., Ohio State, and Malik Washington at University of Virginia, right? Or they have some really, really elite QB play going on. That offense is absolutely elite. Think Malik Nabers, think Rome Odunze, think Troy Franklin. I would love nothing more than to see Jackson Arnold be an elite quarterback for Oklahoma next year and produce some wide receivers for some top end wide receivers for Oklahoma. I just don't think that we can quite get there, given how much Brent Venables has typically shown that he wants to spread the ball around a little bit. And we haven't even talked about Jahlil Farouk.
Thank you.
Coming
Thank
back. You. And like Jahlil Farouk, he's probably going to take that slot position more than likely that gave Drake Stoops so much greatness last year. And so I'm looking at Anderson, his ADP is wide receiver 45. Pretty hot take. It's a hot take, in my opinion, that you would expect him to be a top 12 wide receiver from there. Burks a little bit less. Again, his ADP has jumped up quite a bit. He was wide receiver 21 in ADP this past May. And so to expect him to go from 21 to 5, not quite as hot, but I personally just don't see the path here. So I think combined with the fact that both Alec and Steve seem confident in knowing which wide receiver at Oklahoma is going to be the top guy, and assuming that they're going to have the necessary things to push them into the top 12 and top 5, I'm going to go devil's anus here. It's a bit hot.
It's a double anus for me.
Double anus for
you? Double anus for me, because listen, everything you said is 100% correct, right? Neighbors, Odunze, Franklin, Washington, Harrison. Neither one of these guys is getting 100 targets. Deion Burks and Nick Anderson isn't getting 100 targets. And they kind of work against each other, right? Mm-hmm. One guy is touchdown dependent. One guy is reception dependent. And so, like, you need both. You mm-hmm. have to be able to get both to be a top five wide receiver. What makes those five that we just mentioned absolutely insanely good is they did it with a guy on the other side of the field that was getting 80-plus targets, right? Neighbors mm-hmm. had Lacy. He was Thomas and Lacy. They both got over 50 targets. Thomas got 80-plus targets. Washington had Malachi Fields, 80-plus targets. Franklin had three guys that garnered at least 50-plus targets. Odunze, two guys who had targets of overseas. So there was and we all know what Ohio State. These guys is three. They're going to have Burks, Anderson, Farouk. I think Farouk gets the most targets out of the whole bunch, right? We're also forgetting that.
That's his own hot take right there, honestly.
Right? Gavin Sawchuk's probably going to eat into that receiving those two targets as well. I just can't see Jackson coming out the gate in the first 4 weeks without having any speed bumps in the lane. We've seen what he had in that bowl game, right? He had three mm-hmm. interceptions. He has those wow moments, but he also has those, oh, man, wish he had that one back moments. I think at the end of it, he's going to be, you know, top three quarterback in college football in his class. Yes, I agree. But what was Jackson Arnold that he loved when he was playing, when he was Gatorade Player of the Year? He loved that slot guy that he could pepper, because when he had to roll out, right? If he couldn't throw that deep ball because guy beat that coverage, boom, I'm looking for that guy in the middle of the field that can sit down in space and make it work. That's Farouk. For me, I think Farouk's going to lead that team in targets. I think neither one of these guys even sniff top 20.
I could totally see it. Again, I haven't been drafting a ton of Nick Anderson or Deion Burks. Burks, I might have been a little bit more interested after his five catches, 174 yards, two touchdowns in the spring game, but then his ADP got out of control. He's going in the fifth round now, and I'm like, I can't do that. I can't
against
do that.
His team, though. He went did that against his own team.
No, I know. I agree. I agree 100% that you can't read too much into it. But I was like, okay, I'm willing to, like, if he's down there in, like, you know, the 10th, the 15th round, and he's still there, yeah, I'll take the shot on Deion Burks. He looked really good. Don't get me wrong. But, like, fifth round, when I don't even know if he's really the number one guy, because in that spring game, Anderson was out, Farouk was out. Like, right. They missed a bunch of their guys, like, of course, Jackson Arnold was going to throw to him 100 times. So,
right. And I took Anderson in that summa cum laude draft. I think I took him in the seventh round. And I'm comfortable taking him in the seventh round. I do believe he's a touchdown guy. I think he's going to be that deep threat guy and that red zone guy. So I do believe that on the floor, he gets 7 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. But I think at the ceiling, you could look at a dozen. I think he could add a couple more to what he had last year. And like you said, he's as efficient as it gets.
Yeah. And also, on top of everything else, they are moving to the SEC this year. I know, like, people like to call me on that and be like, oh, like, you can't assume SEC defenses like they used to be. I'm like, yes, I agree. But also, on a week-to-week grind, they are going to wear you down. They are going to wear you down a little bit more than a Big 12 defense would. And so, you're going to probably see a little bit of impact to them. But obviously, Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas went off for both top 10 wide receivers in CFF last year, and they play in the SEC, so who knows? All right, I'll move our tokens back and throw it over to our next hot take here. And I just had a, my heart just skipped a beat because I thought my mic was not recording. And I was going to be like, oh my God, we're 50 minutes into this. Nino, we got a take here from our friend CK at Co Pieps on Twitter. He says, Jalen White finishes as a top five running back. He loves the schedule. Nino, where are you placing this on the scale of Where's the Spice to Devil's Anus?
I don't think it's anywhere near Devil's Anus. I will say it's at first when I read it, it fell in between the Got Some Heat and Get Me Some Water. And that's one key factor in the whole thing. We'll get into it in a minute. But I think as I kind of broke it down a little, I'm going to go with Got Some Heat here. And that's where I'm going to stay. And for the main reason, I know you have some topics that you want to get into. But for the main reason we talked about in the Green Room is Garrett Green's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that he's just going to, you know, do what everybody wants Josh Allen to do and just stop running the ball. I think when it comes down to those goal line, those late, you know, third and ones and those plays like that, he's going to be the guy that's going to tote the ball. So that's going to take a hit to White's, you know, value, in my opinion, because those touchdowns are what's going to be able to stack those points and get him, you know, to climb the CFF rankings. This schedule. Yes, the schedule is juicy, and I think there are games where he could have big games to kind of offset maybe that touchdown production, and he's going to get some receiving, you know, targets, but they have an underrated wide receiver room, and I think a lot of people, you know, I'm not saying it's, you know, Steve Slayton-esque wide receiver room from back in the day, but they have some guys over there that get the job done. Garrett Green's a guy for me. I just have trouble. I think he's going to hurt Jaheim White. And I was a big Jaheim White guy last year. I do think he's going to put up, you know, somewhere near the same numbers. I just can't see him jumping all the way into a top five running back. When you look at guys like, we mentioned Jenty, Amarion Hampton, mm-hmm. wherever he may go, if he stayed, we don't know. Martinez, Gordon, like, there's a lot to say. And people are sleeping on Donovan Edwards, but I think Donovan Edwards, the way it's lined up, man, he could have a huge year for Michigan. And then, of course, you know, you look at Judkins at Ohio State. Like, there's just a lot of prime, juicy opportunities for guys that I don't think, like, how do you go? What's he going to get to? 8 yards per whack? Like that would be, he'd have to get to 8 yards per carry for him to, you know, to improve better than what he had last year in that stretch run. So it's just, maybe I might have to move it to get me some water. I think I'm going to have to move it to get me some water because I don't think he can make that big jump like that.
So I'm also going to be in get me some water. I was firmly in get me some water from the very beginning on this one. Cause again, his ADP is RB27, right? If this was less of a hot take, he'd be going higher in drafts, right?
Correct.
The big thing is, like you mentioned, Garrett Green, CJ Donaldson coming back as well. Some people are saying, like, oh, maybe he moves back to tight end. Because, man, Jaheim White was great down the stretch, right? The efficiency numbers on White are astronomical. They're great. 7.7 yards per carry.
Exactly.
25 yards per catch. I don't know how sustainable that is, but he also had a breakaway percentage of 55%. And Nate Marquise did some pretty good research earlier this offseason showing that, like, man, breakaway percentage, on especially on young running backs, are great predictors of future success, especially at the college level. And, man, does White have that? The advanced metrics love White moving forward. It's just a matter of can he get the volume you need? Let's look at our top five running backs from last year, right? Ollie Gordon, Ashton Giante, Blake Watson, Amarion Hampton, Raymond Davis. The lowest number of touches that ever a running back got was 232 among those five guys, right? White last year had 114. He is basically going to have to double his share that he got last year. And here's the thing. I do think there is a path to where West Virginia just realizes they got something special in White. If he is able to kind of keep up this efficiency, like if you got a guy that's popping off 8 yards per carry, I don't care how good CJ Donaldson is. I don't care if he can get you the 5 yards. You're going to give it to the guy that's going to give you eight yards every single time. That's the path for White to get there. And that's why I'm not going devil's anus with this, but man, it's going to take a lot to get to that top five. Top five is so elite. Even if you take what White did in his last five games last year and extrapolate that pace to 12 games, that puts him at 230.64 fantasy points. That would get him to RB 18 last year. He'd still need another 43 points total, or another 3.5 points per game to get to top five status. And man, like, that's, again, that's asking for an extra 35 yards or averaging half a touchdown more every single game. Now, the half touchdown more absolutely could happen because he ran for almost 800 yards and only scored four touchdowns last year. So you know, hopefully he get that improves, but it's going to be hard when the staff clearly loves running C.J. Donaldson and Garrett Green there along the goal line.
Garrett Green at 13 led the team, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Like, your quarterback is leading you in touchdowns on the ground. And like you said, Donaldson had 11. He was the other guy. But those came in bunches. So that's kind of like a skewed stat. He had a couple of games where he had multiple touchdowns. I think early in the season, it was when he was kind of like really clicking. But like, like I said, they have a wide receiver room that's underrated. I'm a big Treylon Ray guy. I think that he's going to this could be a breakout for him. And then Jaden Bray, another guy that I think in that room. Garrett Green can throw the ball, right? He can make those layered throws. He's really good. He's like a poor man's Josh Allen when it comes to running, right? He's not afraid to take on a hit, which can be a positive and a negative, right? Because, sustainability, how long can you do that? Can you take an injury? Now, if you get taken out, well, now the value of a White would go through the roof, or could they go to a two-back set? So it's kind of like you don't really know. It could be a positive and a negative. But I just – all of them. Like, he would have to – if he even just doubled his touchdowns, he's still not even close. He'd have to steal every touchdown opportunity away. If he took half the touchdowns of Donaldson and half the touchdowns of Green, he's still outside of it. And that, for me, is the trouble, because now you're looking at a guy that would have to be superly touchdown dependent, because I cannot see him averaging more than 7.7 yards per carry. That's just ridiculous. So, like, to improve on that would be hard. So the only other way to improve would either be in the passing game, right, which I think have an underrated room. I don't think a lot of people talking about it. So I don't think he's going to get many more, or to score on the ground, and I just that's the only way he can really improve. And I don't see them taking away from the Bruisers, who have put up 24 touchdowns last season. So for me, as we talk about this more and more, give me the Devil's anus. I think this is damn near impossible, because there's just too much of a jump to here. And if he does take the jump, then he would probably, then everybody in this whole community would be in awe, I think, outside of CK.
That might be the first time, and again, we've only done two shows of this, but like, this might be the first time that I've seen somebody go from got some heat all the way to Devil's anus over the course of one conversation. I can't get to Devil's anus because, like, I draft Jaheim White for his upside, man, because of those efficiency numbers, and I'm like, I know, like, if he just, like, whatever it takes to get to that point where if he is, like, their workhorse, the upside is just absolutely incredible. So, like, to me, that's why I get where CK is coming from, where if everything lines up, he absolutely is a top five back, because he has the talent to do so if he gets the workload. It's just, can he get that workload? I don't think he can. That's why I might get me some water. But if he does happen, man, he'll get there. All right, let's move on to the next one here. This one comes to us from our friend CFS DFS on Twitter, at CFFDFS. He says, Jalen Daniels, Kansas quarterback, finishes as a top 10 QB in CFF this season. Really, the hotness of this take comes from your confidence in the fact that Jalen Daniels' injury concern doesn't affect him this year, right? Because Daniels, as I mentioned several times last year when I was really hyping up Daniels, started 2022 off as a top four QB for CFF before injuries started kind of getting in the way there. We only saw three games from him last year in 2023, which he scored 21.48, 11.52, and 22.6 fantasy points, clearly not good enough to warrant CFF value last year. But now we're another year removed. He's had more time to really kind of deal with this back injury. They took him out early, saying like, hey, you playing is not going to help you here. Let's just wait one more year. I mean, the rumors were that Lincoln Riley was trying to poach him from Kansas to come be his quarterback. So clearly Lincoln Riley was interested in the talent of Daniels. Maybe, again, issues with his health kind of got Lincoln Riley to back off there. But it's really hard to tell because the staff has just been so hidden with Daniels' health. I'm gonna keep this in the get me some water, because again, all indications to me are, like, as much as like they are confident saying like, oh, Daniels is our guy. The back injuries especially are something that really just don't like to go away. But I'm not going to go devil's anus here, because if there was no health issue here, right? Like, I'd have Daniels top 20 easily, maybe even top 15. But until I start getting some glowing reports out of the fall, I'm not buying a top 10 Jalen Daniels, so I'm going to keep this at get me some water. So, Nina, what do you think?
You just said that even a healthy guy, you would put him in top 15, top 20. That still doesn't hit the guy's, hot take. So
no, I know, but that's why I get him at get me some water, right? Like, yeah, if he was fully healthy and everything, and you said top 10, and I'm putting him at top 20, I would honestly put this at where's the spice, or maybe even got some heat, right? Because that's not that big of a jump from QB 20 to QB 10.
Correct.
But the hotness is fully on board with. DFS does not think that the injury is going to be a concern. I'm scared to death of it, man, especially back injuries.
I agree. Linebackers and quarterbacks with back issues, I stay away from them. I mean, he's one blindside blitz away from being done again. And here's my concern. You mentioned Lincoln Riley. This would be real quick. Lincoln Riley, of course, he would try to poach another quarterback that's already been, developed, because he can't develop any quarterbacks, even though that's supposed to be his MO. And never has, never will. But
I don't know. Caleb Williams seemed to do pretty well.
He developed Caleb Williams?
Yeah, fair enough. He probably did pretty well in high school.
He transferred in.
But he was at Oklahoma with Lincoln.
Right, but every quarterback that Lincoln had transferred in. He didn't bring him in and develop him. He already was. He had already been developed and came to him. Everyone. Baker, Kyler.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
But Caleb was with Lincoln from like freshman year to junior year. Like, cause he was there with him at Oklahoma, so you gotta give him Caleb. That was pretty solid.
Now
you can say that like Caleb had the best high school quarterback experience that you possibly get. I mean, he played for Modern Day, right? They have all the bells and whistles,
exactly.
So you can say that like, oh, he came to him preloaded. But also good on Caleb, or good on Lincoln Riley for identifying that and saying like, hey, you're already pretty much ready to go. Come play for me.
I'm going to play the devil's advocate side of it. I'm just not a fan of him. I think he gets layups and everybody gives him the benefit of the doubt. But Jalen Daniels, is Jalen Daniels as good as we think he is? Or is he a product of a good system? Because in 2022, when he went down, Jason Bean came in, identical numbers, identical product. Last year when Daniels went down, Bean came in, identical numbers, identical product, got himself drafted to the NFL. Nobody knew who Jason Bean was 2 years ago. So I don't know if Jalen Daniels is any better than, say, Jaden Maivia in that aspect. And I wouldn't put Jaden Maivia as a top 10 quarterback now or even maybe next year. So I'd have to say, get me some water with this take, because maybe fully healthy could, but like we see flashes of it, but then we see flashes of 50% completion, mm-hmm. right? When healthy. Yes, he's mobile and he can, extend plays and you have that capability. But for all of that he brings, you're looking at 2 years of back-to-back injuries in your back. That's a problem for me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go get me some water. I don't think he finishes. I got him maybe top 20 if he has a phenomenal year. I would rather take the chance on a Connor Wegman being a top 10 quarterback. If we're talking about injury quarterbacks coming in, to who could have a full season. If you give me a full healthy season of Connor Wegman versus a full healthy season of Jalen Daniels, give me Connor Wegman to be a top 10 before Jalen Daniels.
See, this is why I brought you on. You're dropping hot takes and I didn't even ask you to do so. So let's go ahead and move on to our next one here, Nino. This one deals with the Notre Dame running back room. And again, similar to the Oklahoma wide receiver one, had two people kind of give their thoughts on this one. So I'm combining them here together. Bill Brennan says, the price is right for Jadarian Price and the Notre Dame as he goes for 1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns to lead the loaded running back room. Mitch Hart comes in on the opposite ends of things here. He says, Jeremiah Love outscores Jadarian Price for the Irish. So, Nino, I'll put our tokens back here. You tell me, what level of spiciness do you find? Well, honestly, I think we can do separate spiciness levels for these if you want to.
I want to go with... get me some water for the prices, right? Jadarian. Yes, Gedeon Payne is out for, I think, the whole season or majority of the year.
He's done for the season.
Done for the season. So there's a guy that comes out of that room as competition. Well, I thought could literally, eat into the carries in that room. But, it's Love, it's Price, And here's a guy that nobody's really talking about that I think can get some run as a freshman. That's Kendren Young. Because of his pass catch capability, he's going to put him on the field. He's going to get chances to eat that. Hey, if Riley Leonard is 100% healthy, he is also going to eat into that touchdown production and those running touches. So, no, there is not a chance. Well, there's a slim chance that he gets 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns. I honestly don't think that any one of these backs gets 1,000 yards in this room. I think it's going to be an RBBC. Truly, you could see 3, maybe even 4 guys in a game, you know, tote the rock for them. So that first one, that one's going to be get me some water. Love outscoring Price. Where's the spice, man? That's not really any type of a hot take, because in reality, it's like flipping a coin. I think right now, those are your 2 main backs. You got to pick one. You got a 50% chance of losing. Mm-hmm. That's not a hot take to me.
No, I'm fully in agreement with you. I'm gonna go get me some water for the Jerrion Price take, and then I'm gonna also go worst spice on Jeremiah Love outscoring Jerrion Price. Now, I personally love Price more than Love. I have Price at RB67. I have Love down there RB89. But also, that kind of speaks to the fact that I also agree with everybody else that this running back room is hard to figure out what's going to happen here, right? So, like for Mitch's, right, I'm gonna go worst spice. Because both Love and Price are going late in drafts. There's no one guy that everybody's getting in on versus the other one. Which, again, kind of speaks to the fact that everybody knows this backfield is going to be hard to predict. And people are just kind of picking their favorite guy late. In addition, Love's going ahead of Price in ADP. Love has an ADP of RB73, middle 19th round. Versus Love's going almost 2.5 rounds later. At RB85, or Price is going 2.5 rounds later at RB85, like end of the 22nd round. So that pretty much shows that on average, even though I disagree, like most people are already on Mitch's side. Plus, right, there's a lack of specificity in this take here, right, of Jeremiah Love outscoring Jadarian Price. Like, what does that mean? By one touchdown?
Right.
By one
right.
fantasy point? By 1,000 yards? I don't know. Like, if
by he, 0.5? If,
exactly, right? Like, it's like, I would say, where's the spice on that one, Mitch? And Mitch, I know you put some other spicy ones in there, but because we already talked about Notre Dame, I figured I'd throw you in here as well. But I'm putting a where's the spice on that one. For Alex here, again, I'm going for where's the water on the 1,200 yards and 9 touchdowns. That's the specificity I'm looking for. In a backfield that's hard to predict, putting your stake on one of those guys going 1,200 yards, means they break away from a crowded room. In addition, like, Brendan's getting the guy that's going later. I'm going to go with that's a much better hot take between those two. That's going to be a get me some water. And I like Jadarian Price.
If I look at these backs, and this is kind of just like odd takes that I was going to bring out there, but you look at this room, okay? Who is more fit to the Audric Estime's type? And that would be, you know, Love. His body structure kind of fits that Estime. And then you look at the running back play last 2 years behind Riley Leonard and Jordan Waters, his style of play works that Jadarian Price style. Not to say that's going to carry over, because Marcus Freeman and that staff are different, but quarterbacks kind of have some input on how they like to run, you know, their offense a little bit. So it all depends on which way they go. Both of these guys, like I said, it could be a 51-49 split. And in the end, you don't really know. But like that first one, that one's just, you're out there, you're throwing a line out there. I feel like you're deep sea fishing with that one. The bottom one, that was a layup. You didn't want to get burned, so you just kind of threw that out there. You could be right. You could be wrong. I don't think that one's like, it's harder for you to lose.
I think Mitch thought that was a hotter take because I personally, and he does listen to my show, I think he thought because I like Price more. I don't think he was aware that other people were pretty in on Love over Price. And so I think that's why he might have thought that might have been hotter than it actually was. We got one more here, Nino, and I'm going to let you sit back and relax, Nino, because I'm about to cook a little bit with this one.
Yeah. So
Chris K, this one actually doesn't come from us from Twitter, but when I came up for the idea for the show, Chris K, our good buddy here at Campus Again, dropped a few hot takes for me. And one of the last ones he dropped was Ricky White finishes the season outside the top 20 wide receivers. So I'll provide a little bit of context here that I think is pretty important. Last season, Ricky White finished as wide receiver 15. That was on the back of 115 targets, close to, I can't remember how many yards he had in season, but he had 8 touchdowns in the year. This year in ADP, wide receiver 4, middle of the second round for the most part, if not maybe a little bit earlier than that. A couple of pros as to why White is going to be able to repeat what he did last year. One, again, that 115 targets from last season, it's going to be hard for them to really truly lose a ton of ground from that. If you're relying on a guy that much one year, it's going to be hard for you not to rely on him again next year. Even if they do throw less, or even if they do kind of spread things around a little bit more, Seneca McKee, their wide receiver 3, transferred out. That's vacating 42 targets. Dominic Jacinto graduated, vacating 13 targets there. So that's going to be 15 targets that get distributed. So, or not 15, that's 55 targets that are going to get distributed somehow. So that's going to, some of those are going to go towards White's way a little bit there. White still is the star of this team. As much as the coaching staff may say they want to spread the ball around a little bit more, White's still going to get his, especially when you consider the fact that he could have transfer, but he didn't. There were big time programs that are coming after White and he stayed. That tells me that they're going to still feature him quite a bit. Now, where's Kay's take coming from, right? A lot of people are like, well, that all sounds great and everything, right? Like, what's the problem here? Well, the problem is they lose Jaden Maiava. And he was absolutely a big piece as to why White was so big. And they're getting Matt Sluka, the former Holy Cross quarterback, to replace him after Maiava transferred. And on paper, you look at Sluka's passing stats, there's certainly something to be left to be desired there, right? Like last season, he only had 197 passing attempts for 1,700 yards and 723 yards and completed only 61.9% of his passes as a full-time starter. That wasn't him taking over halfway through the year. No, that was a full season. He passed for less than 2,000 yards. And you sit there and look at that like, oh my God, that's going to kill the passing game for this team, right? Because you're like, oh, they didn't let him throw that much because he wasn't, like, if you have that low passing numbers, he couldn't have been very good at throwing. I'm going to take this opportunity to challenge that narrative a little bit. Because Luka's passing numbers, I think, were limited at Holy Cross, had more to do with the system than him actually as a passer. I don't think he'll actually be that much of a detriment to UNLV's passing game. Because, let me ask you, Nino. I'll ask you. Don't look at the sheets. Don't cheat.
I'm looking straight.
Between when it came to deep passes, so 20 plus yards down the field, who had the higher completion percentage? Sluka or Maiava?
Ooh. I know Jalen Coker was really good for Holy Cross and Sluka. So I'll say Maiava here.
Sluka. Sluka had a 43.9% completion percentage, 20 plus yards down the field. Who had the higher ADOT when it came to those deep passes? Maiava or Sluka?
I'm going to go Sluka there.
Actually, Maiava, 29.9. But guess what? Sluka was only 29.1. There's not that much of a difference in terms of what these systems were asking them to do when they were passing deep. So deep passes seem pretty good for the most part. In fact, Sluka might be a little bit better in terms of actually getting it down there more consistently. Who had the higher completion percentage when it came to medium passes? So 10 to 19 yards down the field here. Sluka or Maiava?
I'm going to go Sluka because he was on the run a lot. And he had a lot. Yeah, I'll go Sluka.
Sluka, 60.9% completion rate on medium passes. And a 14.5 ADOT versus Maiava, 54.3% on medium passes, 13.3 ADOT. I really think that this had more to do with just Holy Cross not wanting to throw the ball a ton compared to actually looking at Sluka's talent and being like, okay, he can throw, but like we're so much better running the ball, especially with Sluka's legs. Like, we're just going to run the ball 100 times. I don't see anything here in these passing stats that tells me that if they wanted to throw the ball 320 times, they couldn't do that. With Sluka, my bigger concern is the staff talking about UNLV's desire to run the ball more this year and or spreading the ball around a little bit more. So let's take that, right? It's Sluka's passing ability, to me, is not in question here. It's just totally on the idea that UNLV is going to want to run the ball more this year. So let's say White gets 100 targets rather than the 115 he got last year during the regular season. We drop his reception rate down slightly to 63.6% from 65.2% to account for Sluka's completion percentage compared to my office, right? I'll even keep White's yards per reception at 16.9 per catch, even though Sluka actually did have a higher ADOT on average than Maiava by a whole 2 yards. But even so, let's just play conservative here, right? We'll keep it at 16.9 yards per catch. And once again, we'll go that one touchdown for every 100 yards. That puts us at 95 targets, 60 catches, 1,014 yards, 10 touchdowns. That puts us at 191.4 fantasy points. That would have been good for wide receiver 22 last year. So I'm going to say that he will finish outside the top 20 is not devil's anus, because clearly, just in that math right there, that puts him at wide receiver 22. That's barely outside the top 20. And if things get a little bit worse than I'm expecting here, then yeah, he'll finish outside the top 20 wide receivers there. But the reason why we're taking White so high in these drafts is because he is one of the safer guys, right? Because you know how much that team's going to want to rely on him. Yeah, they can talk all day about Jacob DeJesus stepping up, or Damian McDaniels, the true freshman there, stepping up this year, providing more options. That's great and all. But then when the pads start hitting, is that really what's going to happen? Especially if you do think that Suka is a limited passer, he's going to want to go to his top guy. And guess who that's going to be? Ricky White. I'm saying that this is a get me some water take. I am going to fight against the idea that Sluka is going to be the reason why White doesn't do as well. Nino, I don't know how long I just went on that, and I hope you're not left alone over there. But once I started diving into this, I was like, yeah, no, Sluka's not the reason why Ricky White would finish outside the top 20 wide receivers. I think we need to stop that narrative in its tracks.
You ready for this? I'm supporting you 100%, because as you're talking, my brain starts going, and I'm like, Jalen Coker, I mentioned him quickly when we talked about Sluka and his, you know, completion percentage. You said if everything changed with your outcome, 60 catches for 1,014 and 10 at Holy Cross last year in a subpar passing offense. Jalen Coker caught 59 catches for 1,040 yards and 15 touchdowns.
Hey, look at that.
How about that? So he can feed an alpha on the outside. He can feed a guy who doesn't need to get, 80, 90 catches a year. And I think in this offense, with one of the best young offensive minds and more at the offensive coordinator, right, which I don't understand how he didn't get, any head coaching opportunities. I think that's a travesty. That gentleman is
Mary, new age. Yeah.
Yeah, Marion. Is it Garrett? Is it new age Garrett Wright? I think he's got the same style of play. His offense is clicking. I think that I'm right there with you. Get me some water. I don't see how Ricky White doesn't have somewhere similar production to what he had last season. I don't think in the wide receiver room there's anybody to, even compete with him for targets. Yes, they may want to run the ball a little more. And I got a hot take for you right there, because I think that Jaden Thomas will be a top five, will lead the nation in top five, will be a top five running back in touchdowns scored. Okay. He had 12 last year, best freshman running back in the class with touchdowns scored. I think his possibility he could get 15, maybe even 18 on the ground this year. I think he's going to be that guy, especially since they're going to want to run the ball more.
I'll play devil's advocate here a little bit, if he's scoring 15 to 18 touchdowns, that's going to hurt Ricky White's ability to get the touchdowns he needs to get in the top 20 here, don't you think?
But they were high scoring offense last year, right? Yeah, he had 12 last year, and Ricky White still had how many? 13?
Eight.
All right, so with 12 and 8, I have a funny feeling, because Sluka was mobile. Mm-hmm. Very mobile, more mobile, I think, than Maya Villa was. Okay. Yep. You have I think he's an elite running back in Jaden Thomas. Okay. You're going to spread the field. It's going to draw those coverages. You could get a lot of these, blown up coverages where Ricky White's getting those touchdowns that he didn't get, and he possibly could get to that double digit mark. I think that the running game will favor him. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I just think that they're going to be in the red zone more. That is why I feel Jaden Thomas be able to add to those touchdown marks. I don't think Ricky White falls out of the top 20 at all. Maybe the receptions may come down, but I think that he may have more yards, and I think he does get to that double digit touchdown mark, because I do believe the play action is going to work in his favor in this offense.
In terms of the hotness of the take, I'm actually part of me is kind of considering moving this down a little bit to got some heat, only for this, because this is a hot take when you consider where Ricky White's being drafted, right? Again, wide receiver 4 kind of shifts there in that second tier of wide receivers, right? Maybe as late as wide receiver 7, 8 sometimes. But if you're comparing it to just last year, like, you're just saying that, like, oh, he's going to finish 5 spots lower than what he did last year. And I don't think that's really that hot of a take. If you were telling me that, like, White would be, like, if you draft him as your number one wide receiver, he's going to be the third best wide receiver on your fantasy roster, more than likely, I think that's probably a bit more hot take-ish, right? Where you're talking about him getting into the wide receiver 30, 35 range. I think that's definitely a bit more of a hot take. But regardless, like, even when I was kind of having things go wrong for, even when I was having things go wrong for White here, like losing 20 of his targets from last year, which is going to be, that'd be a pretty insane drop regardless. Like, he still was wide receiver 22. And like, to me, I feel like he's still set up for success to be one of the highest floor guys you can get this year.
100%. And if you look at the Mountain West defensively, there's no linebacker room or secondary that I'm fearing that's going to stop this offense. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why they were putting up 30 plus points per game last year and one of the top offenses in the country. But I mean, Boise State's linebacker room scares you? No, not really, right? Doesn't really scare me. I mean, Air Force, but the fact is Air Force is going to struggle to put up 20 points per game. So once you got them out by two or three scores, you kind of eliminate their offense, becomes stagnant now. And now you're in the driver's seat. Outside of that, Wyoming, but I think Wyoming takes a hit with Bull retiring. So I don't think it's going to be the same style. You know, Craig Bull was the heart and soul of that team, and now he's gone after I don't even know how many years as being the head coach. So I think they're trying to find their identity. Utah State lost their linebacker through the transfer portal.
Well, here's the thing, you know, you're not even listing teams that they're playing this year. They don't play Wyoming. They don't play Air Force.
They play Boise?
They do play Boise. They play Boise October 25th. But, like, here's their Mountain West schedule, right? Or here's their schedule. Houston, Utah Tech, Kansas, Fresno State, Syracuse, Utah State, Oregon State, Boise, Hawaii, San Diego, San Jose, Nevada. Also, that is it. Look at those playoff games right there, man. Like, San Diego State, you're going to be playing against Sean Lewis. You're going to be forced to score.
San Jose State,
they're a mess right now. Nevada, they're barely a football team right now.
Exactly.
Wow, look at that. That's a beautiful playoff schedule right there. That should be a show we do soon, is looking at playoff schedules.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I feel as though UNLV's offense is kind of just kind of falling under the radar here. And I think that's a three-headed monster that people aren't giving enough credit.
No, I definitely agree. I would have been totally on board with you with the Jaden Thomas hype. But I am a little concerned by the fact that, again, like, I thought that we were going to lose a ton of guys there because they were losing. Let's see, who else? Yeah, they lost Vincent Davis. They lost Donovan Lester. Obviously, they bring in Sluka now. We kind of talked about him and his rushing. But then they bring in Kylan James. They bring in Michael Allen, and those guys, yeah, right. Like, they're fine and everything, but like, they are extra bodies, and they have done a committee approach. And so I was kind of hoping that we would lose Davis, Lester, and Reese. That would kind of clear everything up for Thomas to really have a good workload next year. But I think they're going to still try to have a committee as much as possible.
It's probable. I mean, but he only got three starts last year. If he gets double that, you know what I'm saying? Like, double that amount of starts at 101. He barely cracked 100 attempts. You give him 150 to 175 attempts. Give him six starts, at least in this. I think this – 12 touchdowns. I mean, granted, seven of them came in two games, but it just shows you that he can take over a game and become unstoppable.
I could totally see it. All righty. Nino, that's it for the hot takes. I really appreciate each and every one of you that dropped those hot takes. I think we actually were able to get to pretty much every, like, at least one hot take per person who answered. So I appreciate all of you guys for dropping those hot takes at the last minute. There were some great, great discussions here today. Nino, before we get out of here, again, you said before what you kind of do with CFB Nation and everything like that. What do you got coming up? What are you guys preparing for the season? What are you preparing as we kind of get closer? What's going on, man?
So at CFB Nation, I got my CFB Prime show. I'll be going as we get closer to the season, start getting more, you know, lineups, you know, cemented in there. I'm going to be doing two shows a week. One will be talking about the whole body of college football and where it's at. And then one show will be totally dedicated to Boston College football. I get credentials every year to go there. So I'm a guy that's in there and just breaking down Boston College and everything that they got this year under Bill O'Brien, that new NFL coaching staff. And, you know, can Castellanos be that guy and take over that quarterback room? They got a lot of guys coming out. So I'm going to all BC one episode everything college football, fantasy, whatever, in the other episode. That's really what I'm focusing in on as we're getting closer and closer to college football. And then every Monday we got that overreaction. All them hot takes that everybody's talking about, all that stuff that happened, stuff that comes out of Finnenbaum's mouth and Nick Saban. We're talking about that. We want your reaction and everybody in the community. So that's what I got coming down the pipeline.
I am definitely going to have to put that as part of my weekly listen once the season gets started, because you're a character, you're wonderful. I would love to hear your reaction to a lot of these guys. And really, again, you're good at being able to put some guys in their place. You can bring stats out of the hat sometimes, and so I'm looking forward to that whatsoever. I'm definitely looking forward to that Boston College show, because, man, I want to know what's going on in that running back room. I want to know if any of these receivers are going to pop out there. So I'll be looking forward to that. With that, we have come to the end of our show. Y'all, we got some great stuff coming over at Campus of Canton and everything like that. We got the CFF Guide coming out July 7th. That is after 4th of July weekend. We'll have that out to you guys. We're currently working on the team profiles. They are looking fantastic. We're expanding the team profiles a little bit this year to include a lot more stats for you guys to take a look at. So be on the lookout for that, or not be on the lookout. You'll get to see that once the guide comes out. We'll get to the player profiles. We're going to include a couple more sections this year. We're always looking to expand the guide more and more for you guys every year. So very much looking forward to releasing that to you guys next month. If you want to see what the cover looks like, go check out my Twitter page. I posted it not too long ago. It looks pretty good, at least in my humble opinion. Of course, I made it. So again, thank you guys all for listening. If you've not already, go ahead and leave the like, comment, and subscribe. If you're watching this on the YouTube side of things, if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave the 5-star review wherever you can. And make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus Canton Podcast Networks on shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. So with that, we'll be back here next Monday with a brand new topic for you guys. We're getting closer and closer to the actual season, man. Like, as I forget who it was, but somebody said recently to me that, like, we only have one, or it's Andrew Katz. I was talking to him at lunch the other day, and he was saying we only have one real full month left before CFF is back, even though technically we have, like, what, 11 weeks? But, like, yeah. July is the only month we have, only full month we have left before we have to not deal with any more CFB. So I'm looking forward to that. Until then, really appreciate all of you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week.